And welcome back. If you're looking for a good book to read, who better to ask than a librarian? Our next guest made it easy for us. Gina Sheridan is a St. Louis librarian whose latest book is Check These Out, One Librarian's Catalog of the 200 Coolest, Best, and Most Important Books You'll Ever Read. Gina Sheridan joins me in studio again. Nice to see you. It's a pleasure to have you back, Gina.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I have to say, this has got to be a very, very subjective list.
Absolutely.
I don't think any two people are going to sit down and write 200 titles and have the same list.
Yes. And in my introduction, I am sure to point out that I hope people have their own lists and also disagree with mine if I've missed their favorite titles or genres because, you know, we're talking about books. That's what's most important.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to the question about people reading today. You're a librarian. You see them every day. Is traffic up or down in our libraries?
It's so very up right now, and it's always on the rise. Our summer reading club at St. Louis County Library is always having more and more registrations every year. And contrary to popular belief, e-books are not taking over print books at all. Some people like e-books. Some people like print. Some people like both. That's not as a biggest concern as I hear from people.
What about young people?
Young people are reading more than ever. We have very strong literacy programs at St. Louis Public Library and St. Louis County Library and our municipal libraries as well. And they're always very, very popular.
Are they doing it on their own or are schools recommending that the classics be read? I have kind of get the feeling that there's not so much of that going on anymore.
Well, there's always suggested reading from and required reading through school. As far as public librarians are concerned, we want kids reading for any number of reasons. It could be magazine, it could be graphic novels, it can be books, because once you get interested in reading and find a story that you really relate to, then you are interested in other kinds of books.
Well, you've just mentioned something that is really kind of new to the world, and that is the graphic novel. And also the young adult books are relatively new. I guess maybe we're calling them that now, and they were not called that years ago. But how are these doing, and how are they changing the landscape?
Well, just yesterday we put up a big display about graphic novels at my own library because people aren't really sure what to think about them. Graphic novels can be just as literary as the classics. They are important because they get kids and young adults into the story. It's about the artwork also. The lettering is very important. It's just another way to consume a story. And a lot of classics are being remade into graphic novels, not to dumb them down, but just to try to get a wider audience, have another take on the book. It's just like making a movie out of a book, making a graphic novel out of Dracula, say, which is really neat.
When I was growing up, there was something called Classic Comics, which did that with some of the most famous books of all time. And it wasn't the whole story, needless to say, but if you liked it, you went on and read the book.
Exactly.
And that's what they're getting at.
Mm-hmm.
You acknowledge graphic novels in your book.
Mm-hmm, I do. One of my favorites is a graphic memoir called Stitches, and if you don't mind, I'm just going to read a little bit about it. Stitches is a memoir by David Small. David Small's parents waited 3 years to deal with a subcutaneous cyst growing on his neck. After the surgery, which left him with a giant scar and no voice, his parents neglected to mention that, oops, he actually had cancer, and oops, they know how he got it. Absolutely beautiful grayscale drawings adorn this National Book Award finalist about a pair of highly cuckoo parents, as told from the perspective of an anxious, intelligent, and sweet kid who doesn't know any better until he finally does. As David learns, screaming thickens your vocal cords. This empowering story illustrates that by screaming out, sometimes we can find our voice.
Well, you know, and this, you've just given us an excellent example of the format of your book, because for every title, and there are, to remind people, 200 of them, you do have a paragraph or two about what the book is all about.
Yes.
Tell me something about your process in these 200. You've read off 200 of them?
Yes. When I first had the idea for this book, I scoured my Goodreads shelves. I always keep lists on Goodreads because I have a really bad memory when it comes to books. Mm-hmm. I think just from reading so many, I forget what the storylines are and what the characters' names are. And so I scoured those shelves and then also talked to readers that I trusted. and got some ideas for the list. Some were favorite books I thought were my favorites from years ago. And when I went back to look at them, I was like, oh, no, I can't put this in the book because, you know, things change as you read and as you grow. And some things just aren't as good as you think they were.
Well, give me an example of one or two that you thought would be on the list and you decided not to.
I don't know that I should.
Do you have an all-time favorite of your own?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer. I usually have a current favorite. My current favorite is a book that is actually for children. It's a fiction, and it's a book called George by Alex Gino, and it was just released this year. And it's about a little girl named Melissa who was born a boy named George. And she wants to play Charlotte in Charlotte's Web at school and all the difficulties that come with that.
This has gotten some attention recently, hasn't it, given
yes.
the whole transgender discussion?
Yes. Yeah. Kids need to find books and have access to books that with characters they can relate to, people with brown skin, people with disabilities, you know, people that look and feel like them.
Do you have many classics on your list?
I have a chapter called Too Cool for School, and those are books that maybe, I mean, a lot of them are classics that are assigned in school, but maybe you had a really strict teacher that only gave you the Great Gatsby or, you know, no. not so many
the standards.
Of the, yeah, the standards.
Yeah.
So I've got Beloved on there, The Quiet American, which is about the Vietnam conflict, things like that.
Mm-hmm. What about books that have a special relevance today?
Let's see. Well,
one was pointed out to me.
I
thought maybe you'd go right to it. It was pointed out to me yesterday, and that's the book Black Like Me, which I remember very well because this is a book came out when I was just starting college and had a great relevance then, but it does today as well. It's about a white man posing as a black.
It absolutely is. It's about a journalist who poses as a black man for 6 weeks in the 50s in the Deep South. And of course, black voices matter today more than ever. But that story just really stuck with me. There's not a lot of writing like that. This man had his life threatened. He actually had to move his family to Mexico for a time to protect them. And it really opened the eyes of a lot of white people that who would not have even realized how much racism was still around. And that was in the 50s.
Was in the 50s. I'm going to just test my own recall here for a moment. It's been years and years and years since I've read that book. But was this fellow from Keene, New Hampshire? Do you recall?
I don't think so. I think
somehow Keene, New Hampshire sticks in my mind, but that's really really not the point at this for our discussion.
I can't remember.
what do you need to know about somebody before you recommend a book?
Well, this book of book lists is my go-to list if people can't really articulate what they want or if we're in a hurry, like, quick, just give me a good book. What you really should do if you're looking for a good book is get reader's advisory from a librarian or a bookseller. But it's an ongoing relationship between a library patron and the librarian where they figure, you know, they start to know what you do like and what you dislike. There's a lot of reader's advisory tools if you're not comfortable walking up to the reference desk and asking. St. Louis County Library has something on the website called Personalized Reading, and you fill out a form. You know, this is what I've liked in the past. These are authors I like. I don't want violence. And then they give you a list of some titles that they suggest.
We'll put a link to that website on our website at stlpublicradio.org. We have a caller here. Let's bring him into the conversation. Richard joins us from St. Louis. Richard, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, I'm so pleased you're talking about this. You said something just a moment ago that I really was pleased to hear you say about going back to a book that had been a favorite and realizing, no, it's not a favorite at all anymore because I'm a different person. Mm-hmm. I think that we are in the midst of that happening over a wide swath of the population as people go back to reread To Kill a Mockingbird to prepare to read Go Set a Watchman. Not that they won't like it, but they'll read a different book than they read the first time they read it.
That's absolutely true. You know, a lot of what makes a good book is what you're in the mood for, how you're feeling at the time, what feelings it evokes in you, and your experiences while you're reading it. So and I think that's totally fine to like a book at one point in your life and maybe think, oh, that was cheesy later. It doesn't matter. I mean, if it helped you at one point in your life, that's wonderful.
That he brings up To Kill a Mockingbird. That's an interesting debate that's going on these days with regard to Ghost and a Watchman, and poor old Atticus gets a bad rap, I think, in a lot of people's minds.
That's right, and maybe Harper Lee, too.
Yeah. What are you hearing? I'm sure people have come and asked you about that and wanted to take out the book.
Well, everyone is reading it. Some people reread To Kill a Mockingbird and then started reading it. Of course, there's myriad articles online about how people feel about the origins of the book and things like that. I don't know. I know that I started the book and I couldn't finish it. I didn't like it. And that's another point I want to make. There's nothing at all wrong with putting down a book. Life is too short for books that you don't care for.
You know, that was a question I wanted to ask. I'm glad you answered it that way. It's okay to put down a book.
Yeah, some people have a 50-page rule, which I think came from Nancy Pearl. If you don't like it within 50 pages, put it down. And if you're over 50, then just put it down right away because you're running out of time. Yeah. But I have a book club through the library, and I tell them, like, put it down if you don't like it. There's so many books out there, good ones and bad ones. We just don't want to waste time on the bad ones.
Mm. Well, I think some people might be surprised to hear a librarian
say that. Maybe.
But why not? You know, I can only think of one book that I ever didn't finish that I started, and that was by Spiro Agnew, of all people. After he got into trouble or before or whatever, he wrote a mystery thriller. It was dreadful. Well, tell me some more things about this book of yours and what people should know if they want to go explore it. I mean, obviously it's 200 titles, but it's more than that.
Yes. So I've included a checkmark box next to each title because I always wanted that in a book of book recommendations. I just want to be able to check them off. And I joke in my intro that if you're checking it out from the library, which you can, don't mark in the book or we will hear about it from our lovely patrons. So I do have a printable version on my website, ginasheridan.com. So and then at the end of the book, there's an alphabetical checklist for anyone who's interested. There's 15 chapters on just the genres that I like. Like, one's called Southern Discomfort. It's spooky stuff set in the South because I lived in Savannah for a while, and that's the spookiest town I can think of. And then a whole list of epistolary books, books written in letters. I really enjoy those. And then, of course, the graphic memoirs chapter is one of my favorites.
The epistolary books, I think, are probably going to be fewer and fewer as time goes on because people don't write letters anymore.
Well, there are a lot. So epistolary also includes emails, texts, number of anything. It could be newspaper articles. But I think that genre is it quieted down for a minute, and it's kind of coming back a little bit. And I hope it doesn't go away because I really like it. But it doesn't just have to be letters.
It's history. I mean, losing it. We're losing a sense of history. Gina, are you recommending that people read all of the books that you have in your book?
Well, I certainly hope that they will want to try them. But again, if you disagree with me, please let me know. Like, I want people talking about books, and I want to hear books that you like. I want to hear where I went wrong, what genres I missed. And that kind of thing, because, you know, we all win when we're talking about books.
We'd love to hear from anybody in the audience who would like to tell us the books that they like and why. We've got a few minutes left with Gina Sheridan. If you'd like to do that, please give us a call at 382-8255. Did you, in putting this list together, were you conscious of any kind of a variety, saying, well, I've got to include this, I've got to include that kind of thing?
I was trying very hard to make sure that the titles were diverse in time and cultural interests. I didn't want it all to be the same old white guys that write classics. So I was very cognizant of that, and my editor helped a lot with that. If I had too many older books in one category, he would, kind of point that out, and that was really helpful for me.
Was the purpose of your putting this book together, and be perfectly honest about this, please, Gina, really just to get people back into the library?
Well, people are in the library. It's wonderful. We're busier than ever, so it's not quite that. In fact, my publisher might kill me if he hears this, but this book wasn't actually my idea. I work at a public library last year, and probably because I turned all my things in on time, they liked me. And so my publisher suggested this book and said they'd always wanted to do a book of book recommendations, and I was so happy to do it. I jumped at the chance because, of course, I love books.
How have libraries changed over the last 10, 20 years? You haven't been in it that long, I'm sure, but you must have some sense of that.
Yeah. I'd say the biggest thing is we're becoming more of a community space where you don't have to be quiet anymore. We want you to feel comfortable. We want children to, walk around and talk in their normal voices. Like, we're not shushing people anymore. And then another big way we're different is because of the technology, the changes in technology. We have tons of media literacy classes and computer classes and e-reader classes and things like that, which, a lot of people really enjoy.
Glad you mentioned media literacy. I don't know if you heard our first segment today.
I did.
But it's a subject that people ought to be taking seriously, no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a call. We'll bring in Ken calling from St. Louis.
Ken? Yeah, hi, Don.
Go ahead, Ken.
I love to read and love to use the library. And whenever I read I also like the recommendation shelf there. But whenever I read a good book that maybe wasn't on that shelf, I'm always wanting to put it on that shelf, to let other people see it and maybe check it out, especially if it's not, obviously an obvious choice for a lot of people. Is there a way to do that, to go to a library and say, look, I loved this book and I think you should put it on your recommendation list?
Absolutely. We love to hear from people. One thing that I do sometimes at my library is I have a little form right at the book return, and it's really, really short. So people, it doesn't take up a lot of time, but it says, would you recommend what you're turning in and why? And can we put it on a special shelf? And so that's just sometimes because we change out our displays and things like that. But always let librarians know what you think, because we can recommend books, or we might want to read them and then recommend them to people.
Great. All right. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Let's take a call from Bill calling from Manchester. He's got a recommendation. Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. It's All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, D-O-E-R-R. It's a New York Times bestseller, among the 10 best books in 2014. In my case, it's arguably the best novel I have ever read. The way he handles metaphor and the writing is just extraordinary.
Yes, that was a really good book. Did you cry at the end of it?
Well, maybe a little bit.
is it in your list of books?
It's not. I think by the time I made this list, I think it came out right after that or right around the same time.
See, that's the problem with a book like this. And, you talk about Go Set a Watchman. Also, Stieg Larsson, since he's deceased, but now The Girl and the Dragon Tattoo is coming back, written
yes.
by somebody else, and that's getting a lot of attention as well. What about writing in books? A lot of people will make notations as they read. Alex Hoyer, our producer, is just he writes a 3x5 card, he tells me, and with notes about the book so he can make reference to it later.
Well, please don't write in library books.
not library books.
In real books, in books that you own, oh my gosh, yes, please mark them up, wear them out. I actually like finding little notes inside library books, like note cards and things, people's grocery lists and things like that. And also sometimes people do actually write in library books. One time I had, there was a couple of pages of, I think it was a James Patterson book that had a whole bunch of, they were talking about going out to eat. And the person had gone through and changed all of the meat words into vegetarian friendly words. It was pretty hilarious, but we had to go through and erase them all. So,
right. I'm going to take one more phone call before we have to say goodbye. Rich and Bevo, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Don. Thanks for taking my call again. I just want to share one of my really favorite books of all time was Kurt Vonnegut's Breakfast of Champions. I was 18 when I read it, and it was hilarious. And that And every few years, I'd pick it up for a quick, entertaining read. But then, as I got towards 50, because Vonnegut was 50 when he wrote this book, I thought, my goodness, this is really what it is like to be 50. And it was also a very great snapshot of what America was like in the early 70s. And just like to share that with you.
Yeah, it's really interesting how it changes as you grow older. My husband will be really happy that you mentioned Vonnegut because that's his favorite author.
He in the book? He in your book?
Vonnegut? No, my husband's favorite author is Kurt Vonnegut. And
but is Vonnegut in your book? Is it one of your recommended books?
He is not.
We'll see.
But he's an excellent artist. I really love his art.
Should we all make book lists? Is that a good thing to do?
Yes, absolutely. And share them with me, please. Goodreads is a great place to do that. There's also other book social book sites where you can do that. And also, a lot of library catalogs are incorporating ratings and reviews into their catalogs, which is really nice because when you're, you know, looking for library books, you can see the reviews right there.
One other final thought about libraries is how they are increasingly becoming community centers. And that has happened in places like Ferguson, where it's been a very important asset to the community. And
absolutely.
Are you seeing that as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Scott Bonner is doing wonderful things in Ferguson, and I'm really glad he's being recognized for it. Libraries across the United States are doing those things also, and it's really important.
So I gather libraries are alive and well, and people are reading more, as you indicated, than some of us might have suspected, given this digital age.
They are reading more than ever, and just remember that ebooks are just as good as print. You know, when you're reading, you're reading. So.
All right. I just read my first one recently, and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Oh, good.
Gina Sheridan, thank you so much for
being
with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
The book is Check These Out, One Librarian's Catalog of the 200 Coolest, Best, and Most Important Books You Will Ever Read. Nice to see you again. We'll ask folks to join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk with Pokey LaFarge about his new CD and his appearance at Lou Fest. He'll also take a look at Stages St. Louis's production of The Full Monty. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, in a holiday rebroadcast, we'll examine what makes a successful and vibrant neighborhood. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance from Anya O'Connor, Aaron Doerr, and Spencer Reed. Executive producers Robert Peterson. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Don Marsh.